estimating other marine mammal effects on salmon with limited data.
So I think I might wait for Dave and Sean, if that's okay, because they were pretty involved in this, too.
Sure.
So, well, all of you were probably feeling battered and bruised after the 3 one-hour talks I gave on model selection at Workshop 2. I think the panel had a different response, and they were a little bit insatiable and wanted more model selection. So they asked me to give this talk, which is just kind of a follow-up of what I did following Workshop 2. So they asked me to include different indices of marine mammals in my models and see how correlated they were with killer whale demographic rates. So after Workshop 2, I think what I'm largely in agreement with the panel on is that the issue at hand is that pinnipeds consume lots of salmon. They probably compete in some time or space with killer whales, but it's best how we can identify the impact of those pinnipeds on killer whales. So what do we know? All seals, or most pinniped species, have largely recovered under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, increasing tenfold or more in some cases. These species are super generalist, so much more so than killer whales, the diet is much broader. There's a large degree of individual specialization, capability for diet switching, long-distance foraging, etc. And for salmon, pinnipeds will eat both adult and juvenile salmon. So they have a much, much broader diet, and the question is really how much the seals and sea lions compete with killer whales. So this is the best U.S. data that we have to answer that question. Remember that the killer whale demographic modeling I was doing was going from 1979 to 2010. This data set from Steve Jeffries' 2003 paper, it's pretty spotty in space. There's a gap from 79 to 82 where we don't have any data, and then another gap from 2000 on where we have no surveys of seal abundance. And so, I could use an index from, say, 1983 to 1999 in the San Juans, which represents about half the population. But after that, we don't know if the population leveled off quickly or has still increased a little bit. There's a few partial surveys that suggest the population ticked up a little bit, but the answer is we really just don't know. So without continuous covariates, I really can't include these as good predictors. We also have some Canadian data, which has different strengths. It's longer in time. So this is, an inland, this is from a stock assessment report. We have inland abundance increasing to some carrying capacity close to the mid-90s, and then an offshore index of abundance, which has increased a little bit more. So, like I said, it's longer, but it's also got these gaps in time, so we can't really include it as covariates. The suggestions from the panel after Workshop 2 was to use some ecopath output from Dave Creekshot, which are calibrated biomass estimates of seals and sea lions, and use this ecopath output as quote-unquote real data as predictors and see if it's correlated. So when I looked at the output, three kind of red flags or deal breakers immediately jumped out at me. The first is that if we look at sea lion abundance in red, between 2000 and 2010, the biomass was cut in half. And so that's really inconsistent with what we think is going on, which is that the population is stable or may have even increased. Over the same time period, some biologists from Oregon kind of recorded a long-distance migration of a large number of animals from San Francisco to the Oregon-Washington coast. So there's really no evidence to suggest that the population has been cut in half over this last decade. The second issue is that for seals, carrying capacity appears to be reached in about 1990, but when we use the Jeffries et al. Data, carrying capacity or equilibrium is reaching, 10, 12 years later. So it's for some unknown reason, ecopath is suggesting carrying capacity occurs quicker. The last is that, it's kind of a minor point, but if you look at the variation here, seals and killer whales are kind of increasing and decreasing at the same time, so they're correlated. So I don't really understand why sea lion biomass is not really correlated with seals, and seals are more similar to the killer whales when in terms of the diet at least, seals and sea lions have a much broader overlapping diet. So we'd expect those two time series to be more similar than the killer whales, and that's not the case. So I think that this kind of analysis is just not anything you could ever publish. I went forward anyway, but I think it's got some serious caveats and problems. And I guess I should also say, you know, when I talked to Dave about why any of these things were inconsistent with the survey estimates that we actually have, he also was unsure. So ecopath is kind of this black box. In terms of the model selection results that I did do, you know, the panel was interested in sea lion and harvest eel biomass on killer whale survival. So when I did that, included them both individually in the model. They did worse. If you remember so this is my only table of model selection. The best model before was the Park and Cove Fall Terminal Chinook. When we include the California sea lion, or when we include sea lion or harvest eel biomass individually, the fit gets worse. It's only really when we include, you know, the salmon abundance and harvest eels and sea lions do we get an improved model fit. So only when harvest eels and sea lions are in the model is the model supported. The problem, though, is that the signs of those two terms are opposite. So harvest eels have a positive effect or benefit killer whales, and sea lions are negative, and so... It's just they're in there because they cancel each other out. It really makes no sense. And so I think, you know, these results really suggest that if we kind of have garbage in and garbage out, I just have no faith in the actual ecopath biomass as data. In terms of the coefficients, I can't interpret them. So I think I would strongly suggest throwing this analysis out. In terms of the language in the report, I think that... you know, I would change any reference to these correlative analyses to something along the lines of pinnipeds maybe competing directly with killer whales by consuming you know, a non-negligible amount of adult or juvenile Chinook salmon in the San Juans, at least somewhere between 3 and 17% of the diet, and then refer to maybe the tons of Chinook that are estimated to be consumed based on scat samples and fatty acid analyses. And so these are linked to real data. And this is all, as a citation, I think that you can cite my colleague Alejandro Acevedo Gutierrez's work, which is on the ESSA website. Prior to workshop 2, I guess, that was put up. So that's kind of the proposal that I would, or how I would propose to change things. In terms of going forward, and I alluded to this yesterday, I think that in terms of looking at the impacts of these pinnipeds on killer whales, I think a better approach is probably these multivariate time series techniques that I've really been doing a lot of work on in my other job related to fish and things like that. And so I think we've got a R package that is already developed to analyze these kinds of data. It's good for short time series with missing observations like we have for the seal data. And then we can simultaneously estimate things like density dependence and the effect of seals or sea lions on killer whales or salmon stocks. So I think it's a pretty strong tool. As I talked about in workshop 1, there's some historical issues or problems with the historical data in hand. But I think since workshop 1, I was cued on to a different data set or two data sets that some folks at fisheries at University of Washington have. And some of these time series are pretty cool. They're going back to the 1930s and 1940s. The data are still pretty raw and messy, but I think that we can use them to construct time series. We're currently looking into some small grants to maybe fund a grad student to do the dirty work for 1 to 2 quarters of getting the data in the right format. And I think it's realistically something that we hope to complete over the next year. And then as kind of another aside, I think that after workshop 1, another alternative approach that Bob Lassard brought up was the differential equation approach, which I think is also worth pursuing and something probably that we could do in the next year or so. So those are kind of the alternative frameworks that I'm proposing for kind of answering this question. But in terms of logistic modeling, I think it's probably not a good idea to use these partial time series or ecopath output as predictors. So that's all I have.
Questions on the panel?
I just had one comment, and this does not have to do with the merits of using the ecopath the variables. I mean, I think all we were trying to do is suggest that it'd be neat to look at the potential influence of these other marine mammals. But I'm not at all convinced that the signs of the coefficients in the final regression down there, which, for what it's worth, the AIC, you know, you would say, wow, that is incredible compared to all the other stuff, right? And I've checked with a couple of my colleagues, right? When you have correlated variables, which you even raised in your talk, in the context of multiple regressions, like I was taught when I was a student, you know, absolute no-no to make too much out of the signs of the coefficients, because as you add another variable in, you can actually flip them, right? And I've checked with some colleagues, and apparently the same kind of phenomenon can happen in a logistic regression context. So I just would caution that. I don't think that's a legitimate reason to rule it out. You know, there are other arguments are, you know, having a time series that's full of a whole bunch of holes, you know, I don't think that's good. But I would recommend that it might make sense to interpolate between those holes and see what happens. I mean, I don't see anything particularly.
I think that's a really good point. I think the other issue that I also didn't talk about, but I think it's something we did talk about, is the issue of time lags. And so I think, you know, if harbor seals or pinnipeds are eating a large number, certainly they eat, in terms of numbers, more juvenile Chinook than adult Chinook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the appropriate time lag to use? I only looked at time lags of one year, but I think in terms of the life cycle of salmon, two or three are probably more appropriate. So,
do you know what was used for diet data? Do you know what diet data was used for sea lions and harbor seals?
For Dave's model?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I think that's in his presentation. It was in quite small proportions.
Okay.
2 to 3%.
Yeah, I think Alejandro's stuff suggests that, I mean, the same thing, it's less than 5%.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment a little bit on the on Dave Prichard's EcoPath model. I mean, I don't think that he would recommend that you use the output from that model for this process. I mean, that model that he presented, and I wasn't at the second workshop, but it's a very much a work in progress, and a lot of the input has not been adequately verified by the experts. So I think you know, rather than sort of considering the use of the output from that model, the real question is probably whether that type of modeling approach is worth considering. And you know, basically what they've been trying to do is reconstruct the Strait of Georgia ecosystem through time, and they go right back. So the very first EcoPath type model was actually done at UBC, and it was looking at the Strait of Georgia ecosystem in, I think it was 1890. So they've actually been able to demonstrate some fairly significant changes in the ecosystem, you know, over about 125 years. But it certainly wasn't focusing on Chinook salmon or killer whales. So I wouldn't throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah, I think since workshop two, I think that I've talked to Dave, and I think he's made some improvements to the model. I think one of the big things was he overestimated the weight of calves or the animals that were harvested early on in the time series, and so I think that this is much more flat now, but I haven't seen the revised plot, but I'd like to see what he's been doing.
Yeah. And we actually, just as a bit of an aside, we had a workshop in Nanaimo last week specifically looking at you know, the work that both Ian Perry and Dave Prichard have been doing on this. And so it's like I say, it's still in development.
Right.
And not focused on the issues here.
I wasn't at workshop too, so I'm not sure. Is this specifically just for summer? Because if it's not just for summer, then it seems like Oregon counts might be important as well. And I think the sea lion story is very complicated because it's only male California sea lions that come up here, and it's a seasonal pulse, and then I don't know if your counts also include stellars, and there's stellar sea lions up here, and even in Oregon there's actually a lot more stellars. There's like a few rookeries even. So
yeah, I think I'd have to talk to Dave about that. I think in this case, it's the sea lion and the seal biomass is just a combination of everything. So
yeah, I think it's just gonna be messier because the sea lion's messier than the harbor seals are sticking around year round.
Right.
So.
Yeah, Dave.
So when you talked about the state space modeling framework as being a separate tool, so I'm just trying to understand, does that enable you then to game with scenarios that combine changes in fisheries or changes in Chinook abundance and changes in pinniped abundance, or are these two completely separate?
No, you can do everything.
Okay.
You can do everything in the same model, basically. Yeah. Manipulate either.
Okay.
I think Bob had a question,
Yeah, just a remark, this graph, which I'm glad you have to back up there. Recognizing that this is biomass and not numbers, I'm just curious, your interpretation of the green line, which was seals, was that was indicating that they were carrying capacity, but isn't the line for the killer whales similar, which would seem to but a similar interpretation?
Yep, in terms of biomass, yeah. That's. I mean, I think that the way that these ecopath models work is they run to some kind of equilibrium, and that's what the equilibrium biomass is in his model.
In your plan to look at other marine mammals on salmon abundance for southern residents, are you going to include northern residents in that? Do they largely feed on same significant?
Yeah, I think it's certainly important to include them and as a separate population, either in terms of numbers or biomass, and look at the effects. Basically, the competitive effects is how you interpret it. So there could be indirect or direct effects on southern residents.
So is that going to be made available as part of this workshop series, or is that something in the future?
It's something. I think it's going to take us a year to get it together. I think it's. I can't promise it as part of this workshop. You know, this report's due in the next couple of months, but. Yeah, touch base with me in another 6 months or so.
All right. Great. Thanks, Eric.